We're holding on Nun Dalet Amud Aleph, about 10 lines from the bottom. The line begins with Lichnasay. We're still in the middle of the discussion, trying to figure out when Reb Meir versus Reb Yehuda, when each of them would say that we cancel somebody who does something with Shogig, even if he did it with Shogig, because it's too easily confused with the case where somebody does it with Mazid. So our Mishnah had given us a case, the person is Mekame, somebody else's Truma or Hulin is the case maybe, or Dameya or Manasseh. So we said the Mishnah had told us there's a difference between Shogig and Mazid. We had a Braisa where the Meir says differently, that even B'Shogig, we're still going to cancel him. And we were going back and forth about when Reb Meir says you would and wouldn't, and when Reb Yehuda says you would and you wouldn't. One thing so far we've been discussing, the idea that Reb Meir would say that you cancel him with things Drabanan, but not with things Daraisa. So the things Drabanan mean more Chizuk. So, Tashma. Gamshin Nitma, if you have blood of a korban that became Tomei, Vizokai, but the Koyim sprinkled it on the Mizbeach anyway. Vishogig Hurtza, if he did it Vishogig, then it's accepted, the korban is acceptable. Bemezid Loi Hurtza, if he does it Bemezid, then the korban is not acceptable. Now, Mitzaraisa, it would be kosher either way, because we learned way, way back in Pesachim that the fit of the Koyim Gadol has the ability when the Kohen Gadol, we have a machlokes whether it's when the Kohen Gadol is wearing it or all the time, but whatever, the tzitz has the ability to be meratzet to that certain kinds of korbanos, even though ordinarily they wouldn't be acceptable, that they become acceptable.
In this case, the tzitz, in other words, it would not.
It would not, right? But with the tzitz, it's about his meratzet, and therefore the meat of the korban will now be able to be eaten. So therefore, if it's b'shoigig, then we leave well enough alone. We say that that's okay. If it was b'mezid, then midrabbanan, we cancel and say that the kohen is not allowed to eat the meat. However, either way, the korban was acceptable in the sense that when we say loy hutza, we don't mean the korban's no good and the owner has to bring a new one. Rashi says it means that we're going to cancel and say that the kohenim can't eat the meat of this korban. Tosfos, by the way, points out that the Gemara there in Sochem has a discussion when we say what? Hurtza really means acceptable by the Eberstein. So the whole concept that you're not allowed to sprinkle it is only Drabanan, because Midaraisa would be kosher because of the tzitz. And we're saying that Reb Meir is canceling him when he's Bemezid, but not when he's Shogig. Now, Tosfos points out, the Gemara and Pesachim over there, when we had the whole Sugya a couple of years back, about this whole business of dam b'shogig versus b'mezid, there were two explanations in the Gemara. What was b'shogig and what was b'shogig versus b'mezid? Was it that the blood became tamei b'shogig versus b'mezid, or is it that the kohen sprinkled it on the mizbeach b'shogig versus b'mezid? Our Gemara obviously is going according to the opinion that the second one, that the b'mezid and b'shogig, is referring to the sprinkling. And the answer is, Amalach Reb Meir, because Reb Meir can tell you, Hochi Hashta, how do you think to compare? Hossam Gavril Hapuri Komachavin, similar answer to what we said yesterday, at the end of the thing about Truma, that the person is, after all, trying to be Mechaper, he is trying to bring the Korban properly, and not make him a Nikase. How could we cancel him? How could we make him have to pay for the Korban or not be able to eat it or whatever if he did it for Shogi? So therefore, there's logic over there, even though it's Dirabanan, to not cancel him when he did it for Shogig, because after all, he was trying to do the right thing. Again, as opposed to our Mishnah, where he was Matamim and Nameh and Manasseh, where none of those things, it's not something that he did intending to do the right thing. He made a mistake, but it's not like he was trying to do the right thing.
Hachiyashta
means literally, it means how could you think to compare them? I mean, if you want to translate it literally, Hachi means like this, and Hashta means now. So, like this now, like how could you think to, like, how could you think that this that you're talking about now is comparable to what we were talking about before?
Because here
he's trying to do the right thing when he's swinging the blood. Tashma, come, let's bring another proof. A Mishnah tells us in Masechta Truma, Tama Aser b'Shabbos, if somebody takes Maaser from his produce on Shabbos, b'Shogig Yoichal, if he did it b'Shogig, he's allowed to eat it. B'Mezid Lo Yoichal, if he does it b'Mezid, he's not allowed to eat. And we're assuming Stam Mishnah is Reb Meir.
That's a Mishnah? Or
it's a Mishnah. That's it's Stam Mishnah, so it should be appointed to Reb Meir. The previous one, actually, Tosfos points out, it's not a Mishnah, it's a Braisa. So technically, we could have said it doesn't go according to Reb Meir, but based on the discussion and Sochem over there, the Gemara preferred to assume that it goes according to Reb Meir. So in this case, where he takes Meiser on Shabbos, b'shoyge gyech u'meizu lo yechol. That's only d'rabbanan. D'raita you will have to take from on Meiser on Shabbos. And again, the answer is similar. Hochi hashta, how could you think to compare them? Hasam gavra l'takone kamachavin. In that case, the person is trying to correct things. He's trying to give truma and meiser, which after all is a mitzvah. And then leikum will say we shouldn't cancel him for that, even though it was the wrong thing to do. Tashma. Come, let's bring a proof from another case in that same Mishnah. Hamatzor Kalim b'Shabbos, if somebody tovels Kalim on Shabbos, which is also the Rabbanon, because it's Masakin, it makes it look like he's fixing the Kalim. B'Shogeg Yishtamishman, if he did it B'Shogeg, he can use them on Shabbos. But Mezid Lo Yishtamishman, if he didn't know that you're not allowed to tovel on Shabbos. B'Mezid Lo Yishtamishman. Again, you see that there's a difference between Shogeg and Mezid, according to the mayor. And again, the answer is Hochiashta, Hossam Gabriel Tahuri Mani Kamachabin. He wants to be Matahir his Kalim. He's trying to do the right thing. And then Lakum Malikmase. So how could we go and counsel him? So far, what we have, in other words, according to the mayor, is basically we're saying like this. Basically, when it's an issue, Dereisa, when the original thing that he did was also Dereisa, we don't penalize a Shogeg, only a Mezid, because we figure something that's Dereisa people are going to be more careful with. Something that Abanon we do. However, exceptions to that are when it's something where he's trying to do the right thing, like these last couple of cases, even if it's the Rabbanan, we don't penalize him. Conversely, with things that are lighter, if it's something that we know people are careless with, for example, Shvius, we talked about when we learned yesterday, or where there's a special chumrah to it, like Avodah Zarah, then he is Nachmir. And then cancer is show you that's amazing. Fine. Now, though, we can find a contradiction between two statements of Rabbi Yehuda within things that are bottom. We said our Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Yehuda, which says that there is a difference between Shogeg and Mezid. We don't cancel him when he's for Shogeg, and we assume that that's because of Rabbanan, that he only cancels in things that are Raisa, exactly the opposite of Rameir. Now I can find you a contradiction with something that Rabbanan, when he does cancel Shogeg or Mezid. The time, yes, we learn it for Raisa. Now, you have like this. We know that various kinds of Isurim can be bottled in different amounts. Most Isurim are bottled in 60, Shulma you need 100, Orla and Kalaya Kedem you need 200. Besides that, the Mishnah tells us in the Sefta Orla, there's seven different kinds of produce that they're considered to be of such great importance, like they're sold individually or whatever, that they're never bottled. They're Dava Choshev and therefore they're never bottled. The Mishnah lists over there seven different kinds of produce. The first one on the list is a gerze perech, nuts, perech nuts. So a couple of different explanations. I think Rashi said that perech means that they're soft shelled nuts. Perech means like breaking, like a word is perech, means they're nuts whose shells are easily broken. So therefore they're higher quality. I believe that Rambam says that perech is the name of a place that they come from, where the nuts from there were very high quality, whatever it is. So the din is, so if you have, for example, a gozi perech, which were orla, if they get mixed in with even 1,000 other nuts, all of them are osir. However, that's only as long as the nuts are whole. If they get broken, if they're cracked open, then they can be bottled in 200 like any other orla. So a braisa tells us, not luvenispatsu. What happens then? So you have these gozi perech that were orla. Some of them fell into a bunch of nuts of regular chulin, regular stuff that you're allowed to eat, and afterwards they were broken open, which should be about to them. Echad shogig ve'echad mezid lo yalu. Regardless whether they were cracked, b'shogig or mezid, b'shogig meaning that you didn't know that there was orla in there, you weren't trying to be mevatel le'isur, or mezid, you're trying deliberately to be mevatel le'isur. Either way, lo yalu, they can't come up, meaning you can't cancel them out. Everything still remains osur. Give it a mayor.
Echad shogig means what?
Shogig means that he cracked them not with the intention of being mevatel le'isur. He cracked them because he needs a bunch of cracked nuts. And afterwards, he realized, wait a minute, there's Orla among them. But Mezid would mean he knew that there's Orla there. He knew that cracking them is that once they're cracked, they're not, they're bottled, they'll be bottled in 200 already, and he did it intending to do that in order to be Mavatal the Isser. So the mayor says, either way, lo yalu, you can't cancel it out. Dibra Meir, Rabbi Yehuda. So the mayor and Rabbi Yehuda both agree to that. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, and B'shogeg yalu, Mezid lo yalu. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon say that it depends whether you did it b'shogeg or mezid. Now, Now, in this case of being mevatel orla, the whole concept that you need 200 is only d'rabbanan. We We learned it actually, I mean, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that's used as an asmachta for it, but the basic concept is the Rabbanan. Because midaraisa chad b'tshrei batel. Because midaraisa, it's enough to be mevatel an iser one in two. In two. Meaning, because we learned from today's parasha, achar rab l'achar. It's not only in cases in Beis Din, it's in general. The Torah tells us to follow the majority. So midaraisa. No, everything. So midaraisa, if you were to have one nut of everything, yeah. So midaraisa, if you were to have one nut of orla that fell and got mixed in with two nuts of cholin, then it would be good. And you could, yeah, because you have two to outweigh the one. It's only the Rabbanan, the Rabbanan who degozer, it's only the Rabbanan who goes there, that's not good enough, and you need 200. The Kakon, it's Rabbi Hoda, and yet you're telling me Rabbi Hoda is canceling. So Rabbi Meir, we should understand. Rabbi Meir says you can't say in things the Rabbanan. Rabbi Hoda, why we were saying all this time that he doesn't do Shogeg HaTzemezid in things the Rabbanan, why is he over here? The answer is Hossam, Hain, it's time in the Rabbi Hoda, Mishim to Asi Li Arumi. Yes, but the reason for Rabbi Hoda over here is because if you allow him to do that, then he's going to come and play a trick. Meaning he's going to say, I did it for Shogeg. Now, the obvious question is, that is Kuntzer Shogeg HaTzemezid. That's what we mean. When we say Kuntzer Shogeg HaTzemezid, it means we want to give him a knack, even when he claims to have done it for Shogeg, because he may have really done it for Mezid. So what exactly is the Gemara saying over here? So various Acharonim talk about a difference between Ostili Irumi over here versus what we were talking about before, Kuntzer Shogeg HaTzemezid. First of all, among the Rishonim, the Rashba talks about what we said before, that we mentioned before, and we started the sugya, that the Rashba says, Rabbi Huda in general says, we don't want to cancel Shogeg HaTzemezid, because how are you going to, after all, you could have a person who genuinely did it for Shogeg, you don't want to penalize them. So that, but in this case over here, there's much more of a chance that he's doing it, that they're doing it in a trickery. So one explanation is indeed because he benefits from it, because otherwise the whole thing would be also right. But another way of looking at it is, when it comes to, for example, Matame, Medame, Menasseh, he's concerned, what if somebody afterwards figures out that he did it the Mezid? Whereas when it comes to the nuts over here, either way, you're cracking the nuts the same way. There's no difference between how you crack nuts for Shogeg versus how you crack them Mezid. He's going to figure that nobody's ever going to catch on. Therefore, even Rabbi Hoda would agree you're going to pass him in this case. And they talk about different other possibilities, including that... That's the point. In other words, therefore we can't say him, Rabbi Yehuda says, and therefore even he did it b'shogeg, even if it was genuinely b'shogeg, he really didn't realize that you're not allowed to crack these nuts and be mevatel the iser. Nevertheless, we're still going to say it's still also to him. But that's how we have to do it, because it's... No, but that's how it is. Maram Sheif talks about another possibility that the fact is, he can always claim, I wanted to crack these nuts. I didn't have any specific intention in mind. So whatever. That we can't say him by saying that we still consider as if these nuts were whole. If they were whole, they wouldn't be bottle medrabanan because they were double chashu. And therefore, we're still going to allow it to not be, we're still going to say it's not bottle. We're still going to say that the whole thing is considered orla and osabana. So that explains Rabbi Yehuda then. The Gemara, by the way, points out, now actually we can find a contradiction between two statements of Rabbi Yehuda. We have in our braisa that we just quoted, we said Rabbi Yossi had distinguished between Shogeg and Mezid, even in this case of the nuts, that if he did it for Shogeg, we're not going to ask the whole thing to you, only if he did it for Mezid, we would. But we have another case. The Tanan, we learn in the Mishnah, also in Orla, the Tia shall Orla v'shokalaya kerem shenis arvim and the Tia sacheres. If you have a planting, a young sapling, like a young grapevine or whatever, of Orla or Kalaya kerem, that were mixed up with other natiyas, with other plantings. Harei zelo yulakit, so then you're not allowed to harvest them, because as long as that particular planting, which is osur, now let's say it became osur because, for example, how did one individual one become osur? Let's say you planted wheat, let's say, right near it. Or even in Mepharshim talk about a situation the Gemara talks about in Masechta Kelayim, you can have a case where somebody takes a flower pot, let's say, containing wheat or vegetables or whatever, and walks through a vineyard with it. Maybe he has to set it down. Different days about that, but whatever. If it's there long enough that then the produce grows at least 1/200th of its total growth, then it becomes also a kalayakedek. So you can have one individual vine became also that way. As long as they're all attached to the ground, they're considered choshuv. They're considered important. Therefore, it can't be bottled. If you were to harvest the grapes, you'd have the usual kind of thing of bittul, 1 in 200. So you're not allowed to. So you're not allowed to harvest them. You're not allowed to harvest the grapes. The imlikit, but if you did, yalav echad amasayim, then you can cancel them out 1 in 200, just like regular orla or kolakadim. Or actually, you scab in the locket, as long as you don't mean to do it for the purpose of. Being mevatel, as long as you're not harvesting, meaning to be mevatel, which would be amazing. In other words, b'shoyg is fine, amazing is not. Rabbi Yosi says no. Afan eskavim the lachet yalav afan b'fayim. Even if you're doing it deliberately in order to be mevatel, you're allowed to cancel at 1 in 200. So in the previous case about the nut, Rabbi Yosi is at least saying that the mazid, we're going to cancel you and the whole thing is going to be usher. Here he's saying even mazid, you deliberately harvested the grapes intending to be mevatel them, and he's still saying it's okay. He must say, it's my law, because we have a statement about that. Amar Rava, chazaka, einadam oser eskavim in a tia achas. It's a chazaka, a person is not normally going to allow his entire vineyard to become oser because of one planting, meaning that you're not going to usually have, let's say, if it was Orla, let's say, Rashi takes the case where it was Orla, for example, you're not going to have, a person is not normally going to plant one grapevine, which is going to be Orla, among all the other ones, and not put some kind of siman, and now the whole rest of the vineyard is going to become awesome because of it. It's not a normal thing to do. He's going to make some kind of siman. So, and the same thing with Kalayakerim, I guess. So it's not a normal thing, this kind of situation. Well, if it's not a usual case, the Chachamim don't make zeta, it's about unusual cases. So the case where nuts fall into other nuts, for example, that's a common kind of thing that gets mixed up. And therefore, Rabbi Yosi is going to say that it's also when it's amazing. A case like this with the grapevines is so unusual, but Chachamim are not going to make a takana, we're not going to make a zera about that in the first place. And the same thing, Robin, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported that Rabbi Yochanan said, Chazaka in Adam Oseh is kind of in the Tiachas, so that's why Rabbi Yosi is making on it. It's such an unusual case.
You don't have the case of Rabbi Shimon.
Because Rabbi Shimon didn't address this particular case, but at least that explains the contradiction between Rabbi Yosi's two statements. Okay. Mishnah says, a kohenim shepiglu b'mikdash, a kohen who makes a korban pigul, and we talked about this the other day briefly, the mizidin chayav, and if they do it b'mizid, then they're chayav to repay the owner. Because Rashi had said, we learned in Rashi the other day, that if it was a korban chayva, if it was a korban that the owner had to bring, now it's possible and he has to bring another one. Even if it was a korban nedava, still he's losing out on the fact that he wanted to bring a present to Eidishter, and now he can't.
It's a nezik.
That's the point, it's a nezik. So if they did it for mazid, it's a hezek chain and nicker. So this depends on what we learned the other day. We have the discussion between Chizki and Rabbi Yochanan. Is it that the daraisa hezek chain and nicker is a hezek, and the chachamim bring neko on him when he's b'shoigig, in order that he should fess up to it? Or is it the other way around? Is it that midaraisa hezek chain and nicker is not a hezek, which is what Rabbi Yochanan says, and that's the halacha? So really, even a mazid he should be potter. But the chachamim canceled him if he did it with mazid, so people don't go and do this.
What happens to the carbon?
The carbon is possible. It has to be burnt. Yes, has to be taken out of the business and burned. Yes, and anybody who eats from it is kind of carnal.
Using an animal.
That's the point. If he did it, yes, that's the point. If the owner was losing out on the carbon,
he'd be losing
out. Yeah, big time. Yeah. If a person is working with somebody else on things that are supposed to be tahor, such as truma, and he says to him, "Taras shasiti imcha nitmu." He says to him, "These taras that I was working on with you." It doesn't have to be with him actually. It could be that he hired him as a worker for it or whatever. These taras that I was working on nitmu became tamei, or haya oisim b'zvachim, or he was working on his behalf bringing a carbon. And he says, the korbanot that I did for you are pigul, became pigul. Nemon, then we believe him. Aval, amaloi, but in a different case, if he tells him to have... Well, in the first case, it would be a Yisrael, for example, who's working on processing or whatever, the truma. And in the second case, it would be a kohen. Aval amaloi, but if the person tells him, Taras shal sisim cha b'yoyim ploini nitmu, the taras that I did for you on such and such a day became tamei, or zvachim shal sisim cha b'yoyim ploini nispaglu, or the karbonis that I did for you on such and such a day became pigul, ain't it, man? And then we don't believe him. So, ma'ishna reisha, ma'ishna sefer, what's the difference? Whether he just says generically, or whether he says the ones on this day. Amar Abaye, kol shal b'yodei neman. Abaye says the reason is, because if it's in his hands, then he can be believed. Now, what do we mean by in his hands? So Rashi explains like this, that we're talking about, for example, by the korban. We're talking about, now there's four different avodas, where there's four different avodas that are considered the primary avodas of a korban, during which if a kohen has a thought to sprinkle the blood or burn the emurim or eat the meat beyond the time when that you're allowed to do for that korban, then the korban becomes papal. There's four avodas. Shchita, kabbalah, receiving the blood in the basin, holacha, walking it over to the mizbeach, and zrika, sprinkling it on the mizbeach.
So if he thinks about something...
So if he thinks, there's actually a number, Rishonim discussed, Tosfos discusses a number of places, among others. When we say thinking, does it mean even thinking in his mind without saying anything, or does it mean you have to verbalize it? Whatever, it's uncertain. There's different possibilities. Later on, we're going to have in our survey over here, we're going to have something from which some of the Farshim want to bring a proof that it has to be verbal. But wait, we'll get to that anyway. Doing any of those four avodas, if the kohen has, so there's actually, I mean, we could, without getting too far off topic, I mean, there's two different kinds of wrong thoughts the kohen can have. There can be a wrong thought that makes the kohen possible but not people, and then there can be a wrong thought that makes it people. People is specifically a machsheves hazman. He has in mind that he'll sprinkle the blood, for example, tomorrow instead of today, or he'll eat the meat of it if it's a shlomim, for example, 2 days from now when the expiry date of it is the next day by Shkia. That makes it pigle. Because if he has when he's doing the actual avoda, when he's doing one of those four avodas. As for example, there's Machshavas Makom, where he has in mind, let's say, that he's going to eat the meat outside the Beis Hamikdash, or outside Yerushalayim, as the case may be. That makes the korban possible, but not pigle. Here we're talking specifically pigle. Anyway, now, doing any... So Rashi...
Well, it has to be burnt.
Yeah. Possible also has to be burnt, but the possible also has to be burnt. The difference is that pigle, the person who eats it, is Chayav Karis. But possible is not. Okay. So Rashi explains kol shebiyada. Abaye's kol shebiyada means like this. You're talking about while the kohen is still occupied with one of the avodas. So let's say, for example, the kohen has already shechted the animal. He's in the middle of receiving the blood, or he received the blood and he's in the middle of walking it over to the mizbeach. He still has the ability. Now, he's claiming, let's say, he's saying that while I was shechting this animal, I had in mind, let's say, to eat the meat 2 days from now. Now, it's still biyada. It's still in his hands in the sense that he has the capability, even if he's lying, even if he didn't have that thought during the shchita, he still has the capability of having that thought during the halacha, during the zrika, and thereby making the korban pigle. As opposed to, for example, if he says, the korban that I did for you on such and such a day, where by now it's not biyada anymore, I have no capability of making it pigle anymore because it's already the four avodas have been finished. So in other words, according to Abaye, it doesn't even have to be today versus tomorrow. According to Abaye, if the kohen says to the owner that I made this kohen pigle, and he says it to him after those four avodas are done, then that's it. According to Rashi's explanation, it has no effect because it's not biyada. He has no capability. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but right now he has no capability of making a pigle anymore. That's how Rashi learns biyada. A number of other Rishonim say that biyada means that it's actually still in his hands right now. So according to those Rishonim, yes, if he was doing it, let's say, while he's burning the pieces on the mizbeach, for example, according to Abaye, we would still believe him at that point. Only if it's, for example, yesterday, where the whole thing is out of his hands already. Yes. Rashi learns that's in his power to still make a pigle, yeah. Rava Amar, going to Ashkechevela Amalevela Midi. No, Rava says, the case would be as follows. Even if it's not biyada, you could believe him. The difference is, suppose that the first time this worker, this kohen, met the owner, he didn't say anything. And then later on he meets him and he tells him. So if he told him the first time, even if it's not biyada, Rava would say you could still believe him. But if he didn't tell it the first time, then we can assume already now when he's telling him it later, it's not all of a sudden he remembered. If it was that he remembered, he would have remembered the previous time. It's just he's just trying to upset the guy. You can't take him at his word. That also, there is a machloikus Rishonim. What happens, for example, I mean, necessarily, let's say in the case of the korban, he meets him when he's done bringing the part to the korban on his mizbeach. He meets him in order to give him the rest of the animal, let's say it's a shlomim, to go and eat it. Are we talking about that he meets him at that point, that once he doesn't say anything to him then already he has no more mnemonic on it?
So the avodah was
That's the thing. Rava is not saying the difference between before and after the avodah is done. Rava is saying even after the avodah is done, if the kohen says, I made pigle, we believe him. However, when Rava says if he met him the first time and didn't say anything, and then he met him the second time, what do we mean the first time? Do we mean, for example, when he met him right after he came down from finishing sprinkling the blood, and then and hands him the body of the korban and says, here's your shlamim, and didn't say anything, then if he were to come to him later that day, let's say, then we wouldn't believe him. Or we ignore the time when he comes and gives it to him, because then we could say maybe he's embarrassed to say anything. If after that, later that day, let's say, he meets him another time and doesn't say anything, then the second time, which will altogether be the third time since he finished with the korban, then he meets him and doesn't say anything, then we don't believe him. Whereas we would say if he gives him the korban and doesn't say anything, and then a little while later he meets him and does say something, then maybe Rava would say that we do believe him. So that's the machlokes we're showing him how to understand what Rava is saying.
Jumps three times and doesn't say anything.
No, so it would have to be one time to give it to him, a second time where he didn't say anything, and then a third time that he also that he says something, then we wouldn't believe him. But according to that way of looking at it, if he meets him the first time to give it to him, we ignore that. Regardless whether if he didn't say anything, we ignore that. We look at the first time he meets him after he gave it to him, whether he says anything. And later on he comes and tells him. The Gemara tells a case. There was a case of somebody who told somebody else. Taris shall sitim chabiyem pleni nidmu. The taris that I did for you on such and such a day became tamei. Which on the face of it, the braisa is saying, then you don't believe him. Also, so he came to Rabami to ask what to do. So Rabami tells him the letter of the law is that he's not believed. Which some of the poshim say that maybe he means as midas chasidus you can believe him or whatever. Incidentally, Tosfos has a long discussion about this whole thing of kol shebiyado neman, when we say that a person is believed and when we say that eid echad is neman and when we say that not. Tosfos discusses that it may be a difference whether the other person is denying it or not. For example, the Gemara talks about in Kiddushin, where a case where one person comes to a man and says, your wife was mizaneh. If the person doesn't object to that, if he doesn't protest, then maybe we can believe that, Eidechad Neman B'Yisurin. On the other hand, if he does protest, then we can't believe him. So that bears on our Gemara also over here, whether the owner, whether in the case of the Korban, you can't, because, you know, if people would be in the Korban's mind. Right. But in the case of the Taris, for example, if the owner says, no, I know for a fact that they didn't become Tomei, you're making things up, then, you know, then that might be different. Anyway. Rebbe, you're saying that you don't believe him, but you should know something. What can I do? The Torah believes a person even later on. Where do we see the Torah believe? Where do we see such a thing? You can prove it from the case of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. He brings the korbanos l'tnai v'lifnim. He brings the pyre and the soyer, which are brought. He brings the blood of them into the kodesh hakodashim to sprinkle. Now, nobody can see him because the pasuk says nobody is allowed to be in the oil mode and the heichal when he's doing it. So therefore, he's on his own over there. But if he were to say that he had a thought of pigul with one of these korbanos, then we would have to believe him. Why? Because, okay, some approaches say, because the fact of the matter is, you know, there's no reason not to, basically. We know pigul can apply to any korban. There's no reason to think that it shouldn't apply to the korbanos of Yom Kippur. And that's afterwards, because while he's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there's nobody there to talk to, yeah. But and after all, how do we know that he made it pigul? Well, see, the pasuk says, before Adam lo yiyah ba'oil mod, nobody's allowed to be in the oil mode, in the heichol of the Kodesh, in the Kodesh of the Kodesh HaKadoshim while he's doing it. Elalav mishum demehema. So evidently, that means we believe him even la'achar amaisa, even when it's not miyadei, or even when it's not miyadei. Or
just because, well, that's a special case.
We can learn from it on the face of it. The answer is not necessarily the duma, the shamina, the pagul. No, because maybe the case is where we actually heard him making it pigul. This is I was mentioning before. This is a source that some of the poshim say we can prove from this that pigul has to be verbally.
Nobody's in the air.
It doesn't matter. You can still hear him through the walls or whatever. If he says while he's in the basement, while he's in that Kodesh HaKadoshim over there, he says, I'm sprinkling this blood, having in mind that later on I'm going to sprinkle more of this blood, or I'm going to eat some of the meat of the korban or whatever. Tomorrow that would make it pigul. Let's say he says that verbally.
Which can go on his right mind?
Fine, right. We're not saying it is right mind, but it is possible. It is theoretically possible. Okay. The Gemara answer is not necessarily because Elab de Meheman. No, because not necessarily. If you were to say that we don't believe him, Bechlal, to say that say what happened after the fact, then Afagab de Shaminin Nami le Meheman. Then even if we knew him, we still wouldn't believe him. To Dumal Abasa Hochi Kama, because maybe he said it. Maybe what happened is he finished the sprinkling and then he said this. Which at that point it's after already. It's after. So then it wouldn't have any effect.
He could say after the sword came through, and the sword comes through before.
No, that's the point. Again, according to the opinion, let's stick with the opinion that Pigle requires verbalization,
right,
to keep things simple.
Right.
Like I said, there was a great deal of discussion among them,
right,
but to keep things simple, let's say it requires verbalization.
Right.
Suppose the Kohen has finished all the sprinklings with the blood of the pyre and the blood of the sire.
Right.
Now, all that time he's in there alone, nobody can see him. Now, after that, let's say, all of a sudden, everybody's standing outside, all of a sudden they hear a voice from inside saying, I intend to sprinkle some of the blood of this Kohen tomorrow. But they don't know whether he did it before he finished all the sprinklings or after them. If he did it after he finished all the sprinklings, that's it, he can't make a pickle anymore. Now, both of this have been done. But yet there is the presumption that he is able to make these korbanos pigul. Necessarily, that means that if we hear him, that if he comes and tells us afterwards, I made them pigul, we have to take him at his word. We have to believe him that he did it during the avodah.
Even though it was done.
Even though we have no way of knowing, we heard him and we don't know whether it was before or afterwards. But if he himself comes and tells us I was mafagel, then we have to believe him. Therefore, we see that you can believe him even afterwards, even if he says it afterwards. Answer is, the Gemara says, not necessarily, because the Dilma the Chazvini of a Pishvash, because you could argue back, maybe they were able to see him through the Pishvash. A Pishvash is a small gate. In English, it's called a wicket. They had, now there's various small gates in various places in the Hazel. In particular, the Gemara in Zvachin tells us like this. The din is, Korbanos have to be shechted in front of the door of Oyomayim. Pesach Oyomayim. Now, you have an issue with that. The Beis HaMikdash, the Heichal, is shaped like this. It's wider in front. You have the Beis HaKadosh that's sticking out in front, and then you have the body of it in the back. So if you're standing anywhere in the Azara, fine. You're in front of the door. Maybe not directly in front of it, whatever. You're within visible distance of the door. But what about, for example, if you were to go and check the curtain over here, in this side of the Azara, you're not in front of the door. Wouldn't the curtain be possible? No, never mind. Wouldn't the curtain be possible because not in front of the door? In order to avoid that problem, they cut out two small doors here and here in the corners where the Beis HaKalifes meets the body of the Beis HaMikdash. They cut out two doors over here, and also I think the Gemara talks about one into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so they're behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim, whatever, so that even if you're over here, you're in front of a door into the Heichal, not the main door maybe, but a door.
How can you be in front of you here, of the door that's here?
Because the door is here at the corner. So therefore, you're in front of it. You're within.
You mean they cut a door?
They cut a door in the corner over here.
Right.
Yes. So therefore, so if you're over here, or here, or here, or whatever, you're still within a line of sight from the door. So therefore, so Gemara says over here, how do you know then that it's because that if the Kohen is mafagel the korban, the Kohen Gadol is mafagel the korban, that we have to believe him because the fact is nobody was able to see it? Maybe we are able to look through this pishbash and be able to see him. And if we can't prove from that we should take him at his word. Maybe only if we heard the sound, we heard him saying, I'm being mafagel this korban, or whatever the exact words are, I'm going to sprinkle the blood of this korban tomorrow, and we actually looked through the pishbash and saw that that's while he's doing the avodah with the blood, only then we could believe him. But not, but you can't necessarily prove from that if later on he were to come and tell us without anybody looking through that I was mafagel this korban, maybe we wouldn't believe him.
Right. What difference does it make to see him while he says?
Because that's the point. If we see him, we know he did it during the avodah, or we know he did it after the avodah. The case of yes, he did it during the avodah, it's effective, and if we did it after it, then it's ineffective. As opposed to if we didn't see him, maybe if he comes and says, "I was a fagolet," very nice. You say you were a fagolet. Were you really, or are you just pulling our legs? Okay, well, it's kasha. Akasha. There's another case, somebody came to Rabami. The Sefer Torah that I wrote for so-and-so has courage to boil in the Shema. All the names of Hashem that are in that Sefer Torah, some of them anyway, I did not write them the Shema, which makes the Sefer Torah possible. So Rabami asked in Sefer Torah, Biadmi, whose hands is the Sefer Torah in now? Do you still have it by you, or did you already give it to the person you wrote it for? Rabbi have a long discussion over here what Rabbi holds exactly. Does he hold like Abaye in the previous discussion about the Yodai or not? Does he hold like Rava that's a matter of whether he met him the first or second or third time or whatever? Anyway, so whose hand is the Sefer Torah in now? Amalei Yavakech, he says it's in the hands of the buyer. Amalei, in that case, he tells him, Nemanat alahasim tzchorcha. In that case, by saying that you didn't write the Azkorah to Shimon, you believe insofar as you've lost your pay, you're not entitled to pay from this person. But we do not accept your nemanos to say that the Sefer Torah is possible. Because the Sefer Torah, again, if we say one way of explaining it is that Abami holds like a buyer, that's a matter of the Yodah. It's not the Yodah anymore. You have no capability. It's not in your hands, and it's not in your capability anymore. Therefore, we can't believe you.
Sefer Torah is written,
and not only written, it's already delivered. It's already delivered. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, why? Okay, you can say that why should you lose the whole pay for writing the Sefer Torah? Granted, he lost the schar for writing the names of Hashem. Schar to Sefer Torah cooler me, he said, but why should he lose the money for writing the pay for the Sefer Torah without a schar? So Mepharshim talk about possibilities. Maybe Rabbi Yirmiyah would say, the Gemara is going to talk about in a second, the possibility that Rabbi Yirmiyah is going to bring up, maybe you can trace over the letters of the names of Hashem and do it l'shman. That's something which we talked about before in the Gemara about a month ago, and the Gemara is going to talk about it again now.
You rewrite
over the words that are already written, you rewrite them l'shman. Yeah, that's Rabbi Yirmiyah is going to argue that. So therefore, he might argue that, okay, now the owner can argue, in that case, I don't want to pay you for that, because that I could do something that I could easily do myself. However, the rest of the Sefer Torah, the owner is not going to bother rewriting, is because it's already written, so therefore, at least he should be paid for that. Different other Mepharshim talk about different other possibilities, including maybe the possibility that he means let it be paid for it as if it was a chumash rather than a valid Sefer Torah, whatever. Anyway. Ami tells him, yes, as a matter of fact, he lost all his pay by this declaration of his. Because the Sefer Torah with the names of Hashem were not written Lashman is not worth anything. So the question is, why doesn't he rewrite them over using his pen and be Makadish them as he's rewriting them? Name of the Loik Rabbi Yehuda. In that case, do we have to say that Ami does not agree with Rabbi Yehuda? Ditznan, or Titania really, something which again we learned about writing over. Haray Shahoy Tzorach Lichtim at Hashem, a case where a Sefer was supposed to be writing the name of Hashem in a Sefer Torah, at Tfilin and Mezuzahs, the Niskavan Lichtim Yehuda, instead he meant to write the word Yehuda, which is not a name of Hashem, but Tov Lehitub Le Dalid, but he made a mistake and did not put a Dalid, so you have a name Yudke Vovke written, but not with the having in mind the Kedusha of an Ebi Shazen. Mavro of Kumus of Makatri, so you can rewrite over it, you can retrace over the letters with ink and a pen, and be Makatri a pen, and it'll be okay. Give it a Yehuda. And the Chacham say that's not the proper way to write Hashem's name. That can't make it kosher.
So you can't erase the word?
No, so erasing is a whole discussion. There is a discussion among Achronim, can you erase it since it wasn't written with just Hashem in mind? But the majority opinion is that no, because the fact is you have a name Yudke Vovke written there. So then you can't erase it, you can't trace it over. What you're going to have to do is you're going to have to cut out that piece of the parchment and put a patch over there and write the name of Hashem on that. Anyway, so if Rabbi Ami is telling him that the whole Sefer Torah is no good without the name of Hashem being written l'shman, that implies that he doesn't hold like Rabbi Yehuda. So the coins of Rabbi Yehuda, you could just write them all over. The answer is afilu tamer Rabbi Yehuda. No, you can even say that Rabbi Ami agrees with Rabbi Yehuda. Ad kan l'chomer Rabbi Yehuda, l'chodas kodah, because Rabbi Yehuda is only talking about when there's one name of Hashem that's like that, or a few. I want to call it Sefer Torah alone, but not if it's in the entire Sefer Torah, but from the Mechnikim and Numer. Because if you have that parts of it are written over, and you have the name of Hashem appears very frequently in the Torah, it's going to look Menumer, it's going to look spotted. It's going to look like the different parts of it are going to look different than others. And that's not noise, it's not a beautiful Sefer Torah then. Zekeli Mandeo.
You're right.
So therefore, that would
be okay,
but just for one in one particular case, maybe Rabbi Yehuda would say, not throughout the whole Sefer Torah, where then it would end up looking spotted like that, yeah, unesthetic, yeah. Another case, Haruda also came to Rabbo. A person came to Rabbo, Amalei Sefer Torah shekasavti l'pleini, the Sefer Torah that I wrote for so and so, Grilin shaloi lo ibadtim l'shman. I did not tan the parchment for it l'shman. Grilin literally means unsplit parchment. the skin of an animal, the skin of an animal can be, when it's processed into parchment, it can be, you use the entire thickness of it, and that's called gvil. It used to be, they write in the times of the Gemara, they wrote Sefer Torah on gvil. You can split the parchment into two thicknesses, which then one part of it is called klaf, and the other, one layer of it is called klaf, and the other layer is called duchsistus. And then the halacha motion we see now is that tefillah have to be written on klaf, and mezuzahs have to be written on duchsistus. They're the two different layers of the skin. One's the dermis, one's the epidermis, I don't know, whatever. So nowadays they write everything, Sefer Torah, tefillah, and mezuzahs, on klaf. So they don't use the entire thick parchment, because that would make for a very heavy Sefer Torah. It is better quality to write on, but it's primarily because of the weight, I think. Whatever it is, anyway. So in this case, the gvil of the Sefer Torah, I did not tan it, l'shmon, that makes the Sefer Torah possible. Amalei, Sefer Bavo asked him, Sefer Torah biadmi, whose hands is the Sefer Torah in now? Amalei biad lekeach, he says it's in the hands of the buyer. Amalei mitoch sha'asa nemon l'haftitz karcha, since we believe you as far as losing your pay, in this case, we do also believe you that the Sefer Torah is possible.
Because you're willing to risk your pay.
No, because in the case of Rav Ami, we didn't say that. In the case of Rav Ami, we said he lost. No, but that's the question is, my shnomer to Rav Ami, what's the difference from Rav Ami's case, where he said that the Sefer Torah is not possible, but you lost your pay?
But
why is it different? So the Gemara is going to answer a difference, but I should mention, by the way, that Rishonim have a discussion based. Does that mean the Gemara is implying over here that if the parchment of a Sefer Torah was not tan l'shma, that the Sefer Torah is actually possible? Or maybe is this only according to the opinion of Rav Shimon and Gamliel? In the case of tefillin, we learned earlier in the Masechta that parchment for them has to be tan l'shma, and if not, the tefillin are possible. But with the Sefer Torah, it's a machlokas, is that in fact the case? So one way of looking at it is our Gemara implies that yes, it has to be. In practice, nowadays, we follow the opinions that it has to be, and therefore it has, and therefore it's done with Shema.
Why could we be more lenient with a Sefer Torah rather than Tefillin?
Different ones have different dinim. A Sefer Torah has different dinim than Tefillin, and some, for example, Tefillin have other dinim. Tefillin have a din that they can only be written Kassidra on, and Sefer Torah can't. But yeah. Okay, so my Shema Rabami, so what's the difference from Rabami's case? The answer is Hossam Ikalamema Toybid Rabbiyam, because in Rabbi Ami's case, you could say that the guy is actually lying, and he thinks, like, he really did write the name Lashman. He figures, you know what, the worst I'm going to lose out from it is like Rabbi Ami said, you can always rewrite the names afterwards, so therefore, fine, I've lost the schar for writing the names of Hashem. Hacha, in this case, given to Kamasid Kule Agre, in this case, he knows by saying the parchment wasn't tanned properly, the whole Sefer Torah is possible. There's no way that he could argue that he's losing only part of his pay. But Osav Omer, and yet he comes and tells us, Emo Kushta Kama. So then we have reason to say that he's telling the truth, and therefore that really is possible. Whereas in the other case, not necessarily. When he's coming and saying, I didn't write the Askaris Lashman, he may just be lying because he wants to upset the guy. Here, you know, the guy is going to think, here, I have this great Sefer Torah, I paid good money for it, and now I have to go find a Sefer to rewrite all the names.
But in the other case, not the last one, the previous one, still loses three-quarters of
the Sefer Torah. No, the names of Hashem is not three-quarters of the Sefer Torah. No, it's a small amount, whatever. Relatively speaking, it's less than the whole cost of the Sefer Torah. Mishnah says, Heyed Rabbi Yochanan ben Gurgada, we're going to talk about more things of Tikkun HaOlam, because that's been the subject of the parak so far. Heyed Rabbi Yochanan ben Gurgada, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gurgada gave edus in front of the Chachamim, ala cherches shi siya avia, about a deaf-mute girl whose father married her off. She yotze to the get, but she can be divorced with a get. Now, what's the deal is like this. A cherches is, she has no ability to be niskadish on her own. If she were to be niskadish on her own...
A deaf mute,
she doesn't have das. She doesn't have das, exactly.
One
second, listen. So, if she were to be married as an adult, then the whole concept of marriage with her is only d'rabbanan anyway. The d'rabbanan, we learned at the end of Yevamah, made a takana that a cherishes should be able to get married, because otherwise people she's not going to be able to get married at all, and people are going to take liberties with her. So then there's no question. Obviously, if she can get married d'rabbanan, she can get divorced d'rabbanan. In this case, she was married off by her father when she's a katana. Her father has the ability, whether she's a cherishes or whether she's a b'kachas, whether she's a normal girl, the father has the ability to be mekadesh's daughter, to accept Kedushin on her behalf and marry her off to anyone he wants. So then, in that case, so in that case, her marriage is fully valid d'oraisa. Nevertheless, you're able to divorce her with a get, even though she doesn't have the path to receive the get, because a woman's das is not needed to receive the get.
Today
in Chaim Yevene Gershom it's fine, but in the original halacha it was not, because she can be divorced against her will. So in the case of a shoita, we learned over there in Yevamos, that's different. The Chachamim said don't. Not the Chachamim, it's actually the midaraisa, a shoita can't be divorced because any adas lishmeres gita. She doesn't have the das to know to be able to keep her get. She doesn't know, or actually not so much lishmeres gita, it's that more that she doesn't know when she's divorced, she doesn't understand. A shoita doesn't understand that means I'm no longer living in this house. A cheshes has the ability to understand that. She may not have the full das, but she has at least enough das that she knows once I'm divorced and once I'm removed from the house, I'm not coming back to this one. Therefore, she's able to divorce midaraisa. That's Rabbi Yechon and Gudlin's point. Even though this cherishes, not only she was married to Rabbanah, she's even married on a daraisa level. She can still be divorced with a get.
Even daraisa level?
That's what we're saying, because the father who married her off is valid on a daraisa level. The father has the ability to marry off his daughter, even when she's a cherishes, because even when she's a ktana, Akhtana also has no das.
Akhtana has more das than a cherishes.
No, it's basically on the same level. That's number one. The Akhtana Bas Yisrael Shenisus V'Koyin Shecheles V'Truma. Number two, he gave eders about a minor Bas Yisrael who was married to a Koyin. Now, this case, we're talking about she was married to Rabbanan, namely the case we talked about in Yevamos, where her father died and her mother or her brothers or other family members married her off, which is only valid to Rabbanan. Nevertheless, if her husband is a Koyin, she can eat Truma. Why? We'll talk about in the Gemara. Number three, Mesa Baila Yosha, and furthermore, that this girl, if she dies, her husband Yashin, so as if they were married on a Zerayis level. Another thing he gave Edus, Vala Morish Agozol Shabnoi Babira, if somebody stole a beam, a Morish is a large beam, somebody stole a large beam and built it into a mansion, she Yitilus Damav, the original owner of the beam, when the Gazlan is going to do Tshuva and has to pay back what he stole, the original owner of the beam should take the value of it. As a takana to help people do tshuva, because otherwise, if you require the guy to tear down his mansion to take out this beam, the guy's going to say, why should I bother? Forget about it. That's hopeless. I'm not going to do tshuva. So in order to give him an incentive to do tshuva, we say that he'll be able to keep the beam and just pay the value of it.
It's like the Sefer Torah where all the shvus.
No, that's... Huh? How is that? Nothing similar. They were saying the guy loses his faith.
Well, no, when you can replace the names.
But we said you can't replace the names. We said because it would be minuma.
When it's throughout the Sefer Torah, yeah. When there's a few of them.
Okay, maybe, yeah. Okay, I don't see the connection, but okay. Another thing he gave if somebody stole an animal and brought it to the chatas, and the public does not know that it's stolen, she mechaperes, that it's still mechaper for the owner of it, and he doesn't have to bring a different carbon, for the sake of a tikkun of the mizbeach, which the Gemara will explain what that means. The Gemara says, Amar Rabba, me'edusei she Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgada, based on Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgada's edus about the cherishes, we can derive another din. Amar la'edim, suppose that the husband of a normal woman, not a cherishes, the husband of a pikachas, says to Edim, Ru'u get zesh ani noisimo. He says to the Edim, look, here's this get. He tells them when she's not present, he tells them, look, I'm holding this get, which I'm going to give her. Because of Amala, then he turns around and tells her, she walks into the room, and he tells her, Kinsi shtar choyv zeh. Take this shtar choyv from me. So he didn't tell her that it's a get. He doesn't tell her it's a get. He pretends that it's a shtar choyv. Ha'rezim ha'gureshes. Nevertheless, the divorce takes effect. Why? Mila Amar Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgada Leiber in a Daita, just like we say in our Mishnah that you don't need the das for her to be divorced. That is why the Cherishes is able to be divorced, even though she has no das. Hachinami Leiber in a Daita. The same thing over here. It doesn't require her das. She thinks that it's a Shtar Chayiv. Doesn't matter.
The Mishnah was talking about a get. Never said.
No, but it's the same principle, though, he's saying.
So why are we in the Mishnah talking about a get?
Because this is. He's giving her a get, but he's claiming that it's because the Mishnah was talking about a Cherishes. Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgada had given Edis about a Cherishes. Rabbi is talking about Pekachas. This is pshita. In that case, it's obvious. The answer is no. No, because we might think when he says to her, take this shtar chayv, maybe b'chulei batle, maybe by saying that, he's effectively being mevatel the get. And we learned earlier, we learned back in the Lamed, that the husband has the capability of being mevatel the get, at least in a way that she knows about it. Maybe by saying it's shtar chayv, he's implying, but it's not a get, and therefore it's not being given as a valid get. Kamash Malon, that's the Chiddush, because if the debatle, because if he meant to be mevatel, la edim have a amalahu, then he would have said to the edim that it's batel. The fact that he did, not to her. The high to Kama Hockey. So why did he say it like this? Why did he tell her here's the shtar chayv? Just Mishum Kisufa, because he's embarrassed. He doesn't want to, he's embarrassed in her presence to say here's your get. He pretends that it's shtar chayv. But he was not actually mevatele, and therefore it's a valid get. And she doesn't have the das, she doesn't know that what she's receiving as a get. Doesn't matter. We see from the Mishnah, we see from Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgudah that doesn't matter. Next case, Valktana Bas Yisrael. We said that a minor girl who was married to Rabbanan, to a Kohen, is allowed to eat Truma. However, the Gemara says, V'ilu Chershus Lo Ochla. But the implication is that if you have a Chershus, not a Ktana, but rather a Chershus, who was married on her own, then she would not be able to eat Truma, even though her husband is a Kohen. So in both cases, the marriage is only valid to Rabbanan. So what's the difference? My timer. Gzeira Shemiyachu Chersh Chershus. Because we make a Gzeira, because you might have, it might be mixed up with a case where, what if both the husband and the wife are chereshim? Now, a husband who's a cheresh has no ability to... here we're talking about a kohen, but the same thing would apply to Yisrael. A husband who's a cheresh has no capability of being the kaddish woman d'oraisa either. But he's a cheresh, he requires his das. If a kohen cheresh were to marry a chereshus, then she wouldn't be able to eat truma. So because of that, even though in this case only she's a chershus, he's normal, nevertheless, we still make a gzeira that we're not going to allow her to eat truma in order because it might be confused with that case.
But we're both
on a chershim. That says v'leichel. So what's the problem? Why can't? So what? In that case, why shouldn't she be able to eat? Cut an oichel nevela. So isn't the equivalent of what we learned about in Yevamos? We had a whole discussion about this. If a katan on his own, in this case, cheresh, somebody who doesn't have das, on their own is eating something which is also to them, you don't have to prevent them. Actually, we had a discussion about it in Yevamos, but the halacha is that they don't have to. A beis din is not mitzvah lach rishay.
Cheresh, you don't have to stop him.
Yes, and the same thing with cotton. Okay. So the father is different. We learned over there that the father has a mitzvah of chinuch, that's different. Right. But if a cotton is doing an isur on his own, you don't have to stop him. Practically speaking, this comes up, it doesn't come up in eating shreifas nowadays, but it comes necessarily, but it comes up in other contexts. For example, there's certain kinds of toys and games and things, which technically are mukta, but if a child is playing with them on their own, you don't have to stop them. So the father, again, so in this case, so suppose she's a chershus and she eats truma, what's the problem? She's anyway not chayav in mitzvahs. The answer is Gzeira Shemiyachu Cheresh B'Pikachas. Yes, but what if you have another case? What if the husband is a Cheresh and the wife is a Pikachas? Now, the marriage is not valid d'oraisa because the Cheresh has no ability to do Kiddushin, but she is a Pikachas, she's Chayav and Mitzvahs, she's also Tzitzruma because she's considered a Tzar. So because of that, we want to avoid any case of a cheresh in order to avoid any confusion, we're going to prevent any case where there's a cheresh involved in the marriage with truma.
So we apply the both cheresh to...
Both cheresh to chereshes, and cheresh to pikachas, and then pikachas to cheresh, and pikachas to chereshes, yeah. Okay, what it says, v'leichel b'truma d'rabbanan, fine. At least, though, if a cheresh marries a pikachas, why don't you allow, or a cheresh marries a pikachas, why don't you allow her to eat truma d'rabbanan? Because after all, the marriage is valid d'rabbanan, should allow them to eat truma d'rabbanan. The answer is gzeira shema ofi la'achol b'truma d'oraisa. We make gzeira because he may end up giving her truma d'oraisa, which she would be offering. So therefore, the bottom line is that is why Rabbi Yechon ben Budgada does not mention the case of a chershus who marries a kohen eating truma, but only the case of a katana. Yeah.
Because
a katana, the marriage is only valid d'rabbanan, so fine, she can only eat truma d'rabbanan, it's true. But there's lots of a concern. Actually, Tosfos discusses the possibilities of it. It may mean that she's allowed to eat truma d'rabbanan, or it may mean, again, that because she's a cotton, because she's a katana, maybe she can even eat truma d'oraisa, because again, if she's eating truma d'oraisa, you don't have to stop her.
Right.
Yeah. Tosfos just discusses the pros and cons of it. You could have a case, for example, what if she becomes a gdola and they never had relations since then, since she became a gdola, then already she's taka also teach truma daraita or drabanan, so therefore you have to, because she's a gdola now, she's chayv and mitzvah, but they had never had relations
you
after she became
relations to be allowed to be truma.
If the kedushin was valid daraita, you would not, but the kedushin of a kana only drabanan, unless her father did it. So if the kedushin was drabanan, then you need to wait until the first relations after she becomes a gdola for her to be able to eat truma daraita. Okay. Then we said v'alam moros ha'gadol shemnoi, another din that Rechem and Gudgud have said edus. And by the way, the rule is any time we have, this Mishnah is actually in Masechta Edus as well, any time we have that the Chachamim gave edus on something, and those are in Masechta Edus, the halacha is always like it. So the halacha is like all the things that Rechem and Gudgud have said in this Mishnah. So v'alam moros ha'gadol shemnoi, we talked about a stolen bean that you just have to repay the money of it. Tana Rabbanan, Gozal Morish of Bnoi Babira, so in this case, somebody stole a beam and built it into a building. Veshama Omer Makakea Kola Bira Kolo Masu Morish Labilo. Veshama says you have to tear down the whole building and return the actual beams. Or Vitzil Omer, and the other beam Morish Labilo. Vitzil says all the original owner gets the value of the beam because it's a Kanaka Shavim. So our Mishnah is like this simple. That you don't have to return the actual beam, just the value of it. Interesting thing, the Gemara tells us in Tainis that when Yonah came to the people of Nineveh and told them the city is going to be overturned if you don't do tshuva, then they did tshuva, and the pasuk says they got rid of everything they'd stolen and everything even, so that if it was a case like this, somebody had stolen a beam and built it into the house, they would tear down the whole house in order to return the actual beam.
But it's interesting because when you have a carbon that's fossil,
Carbon is the next thing. Let's talk about that, yeah. Now, chassas hagdilah l'chol, we said that if a chassas was stolen and then brought as a carbon, that's acceptable. So, omer ola, dvar torah, now the Mishnah had said only if it was shaloi noy d'l'rabim, only if the public does not know that it's stolen. So what's the difference? Omer ola, dvar torah, mina torah, Min haTorah, this korban should not be acceptable, whether the theft was known to the public or not. My timer, yush kedi lekana. Yush by itself, without is not kedi means by itself is not enough for the gadron to be koneh. You need yush plus something else. You need shinu reshus that was, for example, sold to somebody else.
By the
original owner. The original owner gives up hope of ever getting it back. That's yush. Ula is saying, with the Araisa, that is not enough for the Gazlan to make a Kinyan on this animal. You need something else. You need Shiru Rishus, Rashi mentions. You need it to go into somebody else's possession. For example, the Ganav sells it to somebody else. You need, for example, a change in the object or whatever. Just Yush by itself is not enough. So therefore, at that point, it doesn't belong to the Gazlan, and therefore, so therefore, when the Gazlan brings it in the carbon, it can't be considered a valid carbon. It's not carbon noy, it's not his carbon.
As opposed to if he brings it, it's Gazal, it's still no use, but there's a change in the carbon.
No, in other words, what Ula is saying is, if Reuven had an animal, Shimon stole it, and then Shimon sold that animal to Levi, and by now Reuven has been miyayish, that would be enough Levi could bring it as a carbon.
But if
Shimon himself brings it as a carbon, regardless whether if Reuven was not miyayish, for sure not. But even if Reuven was miyayish, Shimon has not made a kinyan on that animal. The animal is still considered to be in Reuven's possession, and therefore Shimon can't bring it as a carbon.
Interesting that even though if he makes yush, he can offer it. How can you say gadol? The nature of it is gadol. Even if he made yush.
That's what we were saying, that Yush Kedilah Kana. Okay, there is the issue of Mitzvah Bava Avera, but we're not getting into that, because again, we're saying Mitzvah Tachana Samizbeach, we're talking about it, so wait, let's see. Okay. Uma Tam Omer Lo'Noda Mechaperes, so why did the Chachamim say that if the theft is not known to the public, that it will be Mechaper, it's not considered Shimon's animal, how can he bring another carbon? Shaloi Yu Koyanim Atsevim, because we don't want the Koyanim to be upset. Meaning, what's going to happen, if this was not considered a valid korban, if it was a chatos, for example, the korban was supposed to eat the meat of a chatos, if it was not a valid korban, then it's cholin that was shechted in the azara, which are also to eat. Like this, the korban are going to be told that they shechted and brought an invalid korban and they ate it, it's going to make them upset. And therefore, what's going to happen, so the question is, I'm really up on a little, so what's the problem? What's the problem? So that Rabbanan say to Ula, what do you mean the Koyanim upset? We learned in the Mishnah that it's in order for the proper functioning of the Mizbeach. What is the Koyanim being upset have to do with that? on the land. So he says, Shibin to Kohenim at Sevim, Nimsim as Beth Bottle. What's going to happen if the Kohenim get upset about this kind of thing? If the Kohenim are in such a situation where they're going to be upset, the Mizbeach is going to be bottled because the Kohenim are going to say, why should we bother doing the Avodah? Why should we bother bringing people's korbanos when we never know whether we're going to, whether that's going to lead us to, whether that's going to end up, whether that's going to end up that we're bringing an invalid korban and eating it? But they're going to slack off on bringing the korbanos in the first place. That's tikkun ha-mizbeach. We want mizbeach should be functional, that the kohenim should be bringing people's korbanos. And therefore, Ullah says, Mela, if the theft is known to the public, then okay, the kohenim should know about it as well, and they should know this is an invalid korban.
But the other way around also, they can say, if we the kohenim can bring korban that's possible, what are we useful for?
No.
The opposite also is the other way.
No, that's the point, in other words. So therefore, we say the korban will be kosher. But the rabbanon have
the...
What?
The kohanim may question...
No, that's the point. We're saying that mipnei tikkun ha-mizbeach, the chachamim, again, the Beis Din has the ability, lako davar min ha-Torah, to uproot a din in the Torah. So in this case, the person brought a chatas. It is a valid chatas. It's Shevet al Tafsid, so now we're saying he doesn't have to bring another chatas, whatever. But we will say that this korban, even though in principle it should not have been kosher, we will declare it kosher for the sake that that way the korbanim don't have to worry that they're bringing, that any korban they bring might potentially be invalid.
And the Beizin, be made of Israel, will decide.
Beizin means the Sanhedrin decides these things.
But still, they're not the Israeli.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. They have the ability to make takanas on behalf of all Jewish people. This is a takana, yeah. Rav Yehuda says the other way around. Mina Torah, whether the theft is known to the public or not, if the original owner of the animal had Yush, then the korban would be valid. My time, and why? Because Yush kadikoni, because he says Yush by itself is enough to make opinion. Or Matam Amun Noda Ena Kaperas. So why did the Chachamim say that if the theft is known to the public, then it's not Machaber? You don't want people to say, look, you stolen animals are being offered on the Mizbeach. Tosfos, by the way, points out that in that case, if you're going to say that, what are you saying? It means you're saying that even though Midaraita, this was a valid korban, the Chachamim are making him bring another korban. That already, how do the Chachamim have the ability to do that? Maybe to say passively don't bring another korban, fine. How do they have the ability to say actively bring another korban? The Tosfos distinguishes between whether the theft became known before the blood of the korban was sprinkled or not. If they only found out about it after the sprinkling of the blood, which at that point the avodas of the korban are completed, then it's true. Yeah, then it's true. You won't have to bring another korban because the chachamim don't have the ability to say bring another chatas when you already were yotze with the one that you did.
Is that after the sprinkling?
Because the sprinkling is after the avodas. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Bishlim al-Ula. Okay, I can understand the points of Ula. I know the Kohenim Chatas. That's why the Mishnah specifically mentions Chatas, because the Kohenim here. And therefore, that Ula says that Midoraita would have been invalid, and we only made the Takana that if it's Loi Noda, that if it's not known, that it's Kosher, in order that the Kohenim don't get upset that they ate a possible korban. So that's why we mentioned Chatas, because the Chatas is a typical korban that's eaten by Kohenim. According to Yehuda, why specifically a Chatas? The same thing should be if the korban was broader than Ula. Because if the point is that we're saying that if it's noda, if the theft is known, we don't want it brought on the Mizbeach, so people don't say the Mizbeach is eating stolen goods, so the same thing should be chatas, oil, any kind of korban.
Right. So that's
the question on Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is loimim boya korban. Yes, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah is saying, needless to say, loimim boya oila de kolovi. Needless to say this is true of an oila because the whole thing is burned on the Mizbeach, and people are going to say, look, an entire stolen animal is burned on the Mizbeach. El afilu chatas nami, even with a chatas. The chel of Adam or the silik and gavim zeh, with only the fat and the blood go on the zeh, but it's a much lesser amount. The idach koinim after they, and the rest of the koinim eat. Afilo ochi gozer, nevertheless, they made a zeh, shlo yevam zeh, or zeh, because you don't want people to say the zeh is anything which is stolen.
Even if it's
a lesser amount, it's the fat and the blood. Especially, I think the Rashba talks about, the fat and the blood, the fact is nobody can eat them anyway. Blood is also achila, and fat, the chelav is also achila. So people, you might have thought that in a case of a chatas, okay, people would say, you know what, big deal. I mean, it's the inedible parts are being burnt on the Mizbeach anyway. Nevertheless, we still make the takana. We still don't want people to say that. Okay, now let's consider the... Or Mishnah had said, Al Chatas Agzula Shalom Nodelo Rabim, that if the Chatas that was stolen and the public does not know about it, Shima Chaperas, we said that Korban is Machabim, and then Tikkun HaMizbeach. for the sake of the proper functioning of the Mizbeach. So, Mishlema la'ula nicha. So, according to Ula, we understand what the Mishnah means, that in order for the proper functioning of the Mizbeach, so the Kohanim aren't upset, and so they have an incentive to keep on bringing people to Korbanos, we're going to declare that in a certain case, this Korban is kosher, even though Medaraita shouldn't have been. A little bit.
If it's just one animal, but I mean, if it's 10 animals...
No, we're talking about one animal.
And if it's 10 animals, you know that they stole it. What are we
going to do? Then that's noida. That's known. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Only if it's not known that they stole it. 10 animals. Okay, I don't know. Okay, so 10 animals is fine. Same difference. So it's not known that there's no.
Okay.
El Rabbi Yehuda Ipchemi Barilei. According to Rabbi Yehuda, shouldn't it be the other way around? That essentially this korban should be kosher, and only if it's known that it's stolen are we declaring it possible mishum tikkun because of tikkun olam. The answer is hochinamakom, but that's what he means. Loi noida mechaperes. If it's not known that it's stolen, then it is mechaper because that's the original din deraita. Noida, but if it's known that it's stolen, ain't mechaperes. And the chachamim declared that it can't be mechaper. Why? Because of the proper functioning of the mizbeach, because they don't want people to say that stolen goods are being offered on the mizbeach. So still no contradiction against the other. Moskiv Rava. So Rava says I have a contradiction from a Mishnah in Bava Kama, talking about something which was in today's parasha about the din of Tashlumi Kefal and Tashlumi Abba V'Chamisha. So the pasuk tells us a person steals an animal or anything, he has to pay double. And if it was a sheep or an ox and he checks it or sells it to somebody else, he has to pay four sheep or five oxen. So Gunav Hekdish, what if somebody stole an animal, declared it Hekdish, made it a korban, V'Achakach Tovach or Macher, and afterwards he shechted it or sold it to somebody else, he has to pay the tashlumi kefal because when he stole it, it was cholin. He doesn't pay the tashlumi abav chamisha because at that point, by the time he shechted it or stole it, it was hektish. You don't pay kefal or abav chamisha to hektish.
When it's stolen and you give it to hektish, you don't pay that.
So you pay the kefal to the original owner. You don't pay the abav chamisha to the original owner because it was hektish by that point. And we learn a braisa on that. That continues. If the person were to shech this animal, the stolen animal, outside the Beis Hamikdash, after he declared a hektish, he would be chayav karis for bringing a korban outside the Beis Hamikdash. Now, the yamat yush could be like kani. So if you're going to tell me, like Ula says, that yush by itself is not enough to make a kinyan, meaning that midoraisa is not a valid korban, karis, mayavite. How is it possible? How is it possible? Karis. Karis is for bringing a korban outside of the Mikdash. In this case, it's midoraisa, it's not a valid korban, and only the chachamim said that tikkun hamizbeach that it's a valid korban. How can you say that you chayav karis for shechting it outside of the Mikdash? Omer Rav Shizvi, karis midirayim. So Rav Shizvi says yes, it means karis midirabanan. Achichu alei, they laughed at him. Karis midirayim. What kind of karis midirabanan? Karis is something that can only be midoraisa. Omer Lahu Rava, so Rava tells them, Gavra Rabba Omar Milsa, a great person, Rav Shizvi, said something. Don't laugh at it. There's a point over here. He means Kardis Shal Yudei Divrei in Basalai. It means it is a Kardis Deraisa. It's a Kardis that happens through the Chakana Dirabanan. Namely, listen. The Rabbanon declared this animal to be in the Rishus of the Ganav, in the sense that if he's Makdish it, that he has the ability to make it Hektish. In the sense, therefore, that if he shechts it outside of this Hektish, he will be Chayav Kares for it. So in other words,
something Ganav guzzled can be a Kinyan. I mean, it's
Hefter based in Hektish. That's the thing. Hefter based in Hektish. The Rabbanon have broad powers when it comes to financial matters, they have the ability to say, even though it's true, technically, the original owner's yush by itself is not enough to be machnet to the gazlan. But if he goes and shechts this animal, which he declared hektish, if he goes and shechts it outside the Beis Hamikdash, then the Rabbanon are waiving that usual rule. They're saying, even though midaraisa, this animal would not be considered his, midrabbanon were going to consider it his, and therefore, if it's considered his, which they have the ability to do, hefter based in hektish, then he's high chorus for shechting it because he had the ability to declare it hektish. So it's chorus that comes about.
He has the ability to make it chorus, which is deraisa.
That's the thing. The chorus is deraisa. How does the chorus come deraisa? If a person takes an animal which he himself is makdish and shechts it outside of his mikdash, he's high chorus. In this case, the Rabbanan gave him the ability to be makdish it. The Rabbanan said, even though midaraisa, this animal is not yours and you have no ability to be makdish it, midarabbanan, we're going to declare it yours in the sense that you have the ability to be makdish it. So we won't allow you to bring it as a korban in the Beis Hamikdash, because the, but no, actually he said in the Mishnah, if it's loy noyda, if it's not known, then we will. But if you bring it outside the Mishnah, then yes, we will consider it 100% your own, because Hefka based in Hefker, and you'll be Chayav Karis for it.
What's exactly
doing that? Hefker based in Hefker means that Basin has the ability to declare property Hefker, to declare it ownerless, that property that belonged to Reuven doesn't belong to him anymore. In this case, therefore, Shimon acquires it.
That's just,
It means in general in financial matters. Yeah. There is a discussion among the Mefarshim whether Hefker based in Hefker entitles them to actually take money from one person and literally give it to the other, or does it just give them the ability to declare it Hefker, and then, fine, somebody comes and takes it from Hefker, then they have it. So anyway, if Lord Rabbanan Birshus says that Rabbanan placed this animal to be in his Rishus, Tihechi de l'chayev Allah, in order that he'll be able to be Chayev Kares for shechting it outside of his Mekdash. Omar Rabba, how vada coming by Elisa? Rabba says, now I definitely have the following question. Kiyas mor Rabbanan Birshus say, when did Rabbanan say that this animal, so we're saying that this animal is considered in his Rishus in the sense that if he's Makdash, it becomes Hektish, and now if he shechts it outside of his Mekdash, he'll be Chayev Kares. At what point is it considered his? Mishas Gneva or Mishas Hekdesha? Is it retroactive to when he stole it, or is it only as of the moment he declares it Hekdesh? Well, my Nachimena, what's the practical difference? Legize sale or Valde sale? As far as any wool that the Ganav sheared off from it before he declared it Hekdesh, or any babies that it had before he declared it Hekdesh. If you say that it's considered, if you say that the animal was considered his retroactively all along, then those belong to him. Then he just pays, when he repays the owner, he repays him the value, for example, of a cow that was about to give birth. Now there's a difference. For example, a cow that's about to give birth is worth a little less than a cow plus a newborn baby. So like this, he can keep the newborn baby and pay the original owner the value of the animal before it gave birth, because that's what it was when he stole it. Same thing with the shearings. So if you say it's considered his all along, then those belong to him. If you say it only becomes his as of when he declares it Hekdesh, then those belong to the original owner. Hada Amar Rava, later on Rava changed his mind and said, Mistabra Meshach Hekdesha, it makes sense to say that we only consider it to be his as of when he declares it Hekdesh. Shaloya Hechot Nitzke, because we don't want the sinner, the thief, to gain from it. We don't want to profit by this takana that we're saying that becomes his insofar as Hekdesh, we don't want him to get profit out of it, that he'll be able to keep the wool or the babies.
When we're saying it becomes his, then he has to pay the owner?
Of course he has to pay the owner. But it just means the original animal itself becomes his.
The title has changed, but the payment is
right. Okay. Let's learn the Mishnah and the first little bit of the Gemara, and then we'll do tomorrow in the next couple of days, we'll do the Agata, the famous Agata about the Churban. Mishnah says, there was no sikrikun in Yehuda, that part of Eretz Yisrael, among those who were killed in the war. The war we're talking about is the war of Titus, that Titus fought against Yerushalayim, and eventually the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. There was no sikrikun. So we talked about sikrikun the other day. Rashi defines it over here as a guy who was about to kill a Jew. And with a dagger. Well, we said this, maybe sikrikun comes from a word meaning dagger. Maybe it comes from a word sok. Rashi says sok hafazur. Take the yid says to him, take this land and leave me alive. There's no sikrikun in Yehuda during that time when people were being killed during the war. They had rugam. No, we'll see in the Gemara what it means. They had rugam. After that war, after the killing from that war was over, there is sikrikun. Kesad. What does this mean? Lokach mesikrikun, if a third party goes and buys a field from the sikrikun, so you have Reuven owned a field, a guy, John, came and extorted it out of him, Shimon now comes and buys it and pays money to the sikrikun to get the field, because of a lokach mevalabayis, and then he goes and also pays Reuven, the original owner, nevertheless, the sale is invalid. Because we say, invalid in the sense that later on Reuven can take Shimon to Beis Din and demand the field back, and I'll reimburse you your money.
As well.
Exactly, because he can say there's two things. Number one, you already paid the sikrikun and he's going to give you the field, so therefore I was afraid to go up against him. As it is, he was about to kill me. Number two, Rashi says another reason is that because Reuven can argue, you know what, I figured I'm better off with the field in your hands, Shimon. You're at least a fellow Jew who I can take the Beis Din, rather than the sikrikun's hands, where I'm never going to get it back from him. So I didn't sell it. I didn't allow him to sell it to you and then give you and allow you and take your money in order that you should keep it. I did that in order that I'll have somebody who I can take the base in and get it back. On the other hand, if it was the other way around, if he bought the field first from Reuben and then he paid the sikurikun, then the sale is valid. Because then Reuben doesn't have an ability to say, I did it because I was afraid of the sikurikun. You didn't even go to the sikurikun yet. Similarly, lokach mina ish, because of a lokach mina isha, what happens? A person buys from a husband and then also buys from the wife. So we're talking about, we're talking about land that was set aside to pay her ksuba, or land that belongs to her as nichsim lug. So if he bought it from the husband,
directly to her.
That's the thing. But if he first goes to the husband and then to the wife, nechay batel, then the sale is no good because she can argue nachas ruach hafisi labayli. But she can argue, you know why I agreed to the sale? Because my husband already agreed to it. I didn't want to cause friction with him. But not that I really agreed to it. The fact is, it is my field and I want it back. On the other hand, but if he bought first from the woman and then he goes to her husband, then it's a valid sale, because then she can't say nachas ruach hafisi labayli. Zoom Mishnah Rishonim.
If he buys it from him.
If he buys it from him only, then for sure it's no good, because she has a say in it. But even if he goes to her afterwards and she agrees to the sale, she can still later on claim, nachas ruach hafisi labayli, I didn't do it out of my free will, I didn't want to sell it. I didn't intend for the sale to go through. I wanted that you'll take it and then I'll take you to Beit Din and I'll get it back. Zoom Mishnah Rishonah. This that we talk about the Sikrikun, the rule with Sikrikun is the original Mishnah. Based in Shalach Reimamu, a later Beit Din said the din is different. Alakeach the Sikrikun notes in the Bailam Raviyah. What happens is if you buy a field from the Sikrikun, the sale is valid. However, you have to pay the owners one quarter of the value of the field. Why? Because when the Gemara will explain later on in the test, when we learn about it, the reason is because the Sikrikun usually, since he knows he has a guy by the throat, he buys the field at a cheaper price. So therefore, for example, the field is worth $100. The Sikrikun may only pay $75 because he figures he has a guy by the throat. So the owner has lost $25. You have to reimburse him that $25.
Not the full amount.
Not the full amount.
Even though...
We'll talk about it when we get to the Gemara after the Agadza. We'll get there. Amasai. Now, when is all this talking about? Bisman she'em biyavon likach. This is all talking about when the original owner does not have the ability to buy the field back from the sikurikun. Avol yesh biyavon likach. But if he has the ability to buy it back, hein kodem mechodem, then they get first crack at it.
No.
Why not? Later on, you go to the sikurikun. You know what? The times are safer now. You have no ability to extort things from me anymore. I want to buy this field back from you. I sold it to you under duress. Now I want to buy it back. If he wants to buy it back, he has first crack at it. Nobody else is allowed to buy it ahead of him. They can't say, we'll buy it, and then later on he can take us the base. Then, no, you don't have the right for it in the first place. Rebbe Hoshe based in Vinim. New Rebbe set up a base in, and they voted and decided that if the field remained in the hands of the Sikrikun for 12 months, anybody who wants to buy it is entitled to. We don't say the original owner has first rights at it. Abel, no, so the buyer and Rabia, but again, like we said before, he has to pay the 25% to the original owner.
You have to pay back the Paris also?
Maybe the Gemara will talk. I'm not sure if the Gemara is going to talk about that. I guess we'll see. Tosfos, by the way, points out an interesting thing. I mean, this really belongs more to the Agadza, but since the Mishnah had mentioned it, the Yehuda, why only in Yehuda are we talking about this whole business of Sikrikun? Tosfos says because Yehuda is the one who killed Esau. When Esau came, as we learned in Sota, to argue that Yaakov shouldn't be buried in Maros Machpelah, Yehuda is the one who killed him. Ever since then, the descendants of Esau had a special hatred for the descendants of Yehuda. The Romans are descendants from Esau. Therefore, they had it especially in for the people of Yehuda much more than anywhere else in Eretz Israel.
Why did he kill him?
By the Maros Machpelah. So we learned over there that Hushim ben Don killed him, but actually, Tosfos explained, Hushim ben Don stunned him. He hit him and stunned him. Yehuda is the one who actually finished him off. And his head rolled into the Maros Machpelah. Because he was trying to prevent Yaakov from being buried in Maros Machpelah. We learned in Sota. Yeah, the Esav argued there's eight spots over there, six of them are already taken. Yaakov already took one for Leah, so I got the eighth one. We're brothers. We're supposed to split everything. And they tell him, you sold it to Yaakov, where's the document? It's in the giant. They sent Naphtali to run and get it. Meanwhile, Chushan ben Dan is deaf and he's standing over there, doesn't know what's going on, but he sees the funeral delay, what's going on. They tell him Uncle Esav is preventing it. So he took a club and then whacked him over the head. And then his eyes fell out, and then Yehuda finished him off. So because of that, they had a special hatred for Yehuda. So the Gemara assumes when the Mishnah started saying Lo hayu sikrus in the Yehuda, and later on there was sikrus, the Gemara initially assumes that the Mishnah is saying the historical facts. When did sikrus exist, and when did they not exist? So the question is, if during the time of the killing, during the war, there was no sikrus, what's the logic that after that war is over, that all of a sudden the sikrus start popping up? It means that during the time, during that war that led up to the Churban, they did not do the din of Sikrikun. This whole concept that we talk about in the Mishnah, that if you buy from the Sikrikun and then from the owner and then from the Sikrikun, etc., all that did not apply during the war itself. At that point, during the war itself, if you bought from the Sikrikun, that's it, you own it permanently. Why? Da'amar Abasi, because Abasi said, Gimel Gzeres Gozru. During that war and the aftermath of it, there were three Gzeres that the Romans made. Gzeres HaKamai, so the first Gzeres was called the Loikot de Liftaluhu. Any guy who gets a hold of a Jew and does not kill him will himself be executed. Because they were fighting against the Jews. So all the Jews are marked there. Anyway, why? I mean, you know.
Anyone who takes a Jew and
think of it, for example, in terms of the Holocaust, right? If any Jew, if any guy knows of a Jew who's hiding someplace and doesn't deliver him to the Nazis to be killed, then he himself is liable to the death. Yes. So that's the first Zera, was any guy who has a chance to kill a Jew and does not is himself subject to the death penalty. Yeah. He himself, if the Romans catch him, he will be subject to the death penalty, the guy. Mitzios, so the second Zera, called the Kopta Lysi Abazuzi, was after the main part of the war was over, but Jewish blood is still cheap. Any guy who kills a Jew will have to pay a fine of 4 zuzim. 4 zuzim is not much. But Sreisa, then the third one was called the Kopta Liktalu. Any guy who kills a Jew is subject to the death penalty. You know, things are basically back to normal. Hilkos, so therefore, Kamaiso Mitsiasa, so during the first and second stages, given to Kathli, since Goyim are freely killing Jews. In the first case, they're freely killing them, and in the second case, they know there's only a small fine to pay if they do. As of Oinse Gomer Machmi, so therefore, the Jew who owned the field knows there's an oinus. He knows his life is in danger anyway. So if the guy is threatening him, I'm going to kill you. Then when he says, take this land instead and leave me alive, he's fully machmi to him. Because there's actually a din in Baba Basra, Rashi quotes it over here, Toloi v'zobin zvina zvina. If somebody is hung up, if you take somebody and hang them up on the wall or whatever and say, we're going to hang you unless you sell us this field, and he says, okay, I'll sell it, that's a valid sale. It doesn't require his consent. So in this case, in these two cases, when the guy is forcing him, you give me that field or I'm going to kill you, then yeah, he means to fully... It may not be fair, but that's halacha. It may not, that's
coercion.
Okay, it is coercion. In halacha, it's valid. Now, there is, the Gemara talks about there in Baba Basra, there is the concept of Majah. What you can do is ahead of time, before you sell the field, under such circumstances, you can go make a declaration in front of witnesses that I'm only doing this out of duress and I'm not really relinquishing my rights to the field. But we're talking about over here, there was no Majah. It's not implied. Chaluv is oven zavine zvine. That's the halacha. That a sale under duress is still a valid sale unless there was a majah. We learn about it in Baba Basra. We learn about it next year in Baba Basra. We'll get into the details. Anyway, so therefore, so in the first two situations, number one, where goyim have to kill Jews according to the law, and number two, where if they kill them, they're only subject to a small fine. So then, if he knows that his life is in danger if he doesn't do what the sikrikun says, so then when he sells in the field, it's considered a fully valid sale. Basraisa, but in the third situation, Amri, then the owner says to himself, Ha'idna lishko, fine, let him take it now. It's true, he's threatening me, so I'll give it to him now. L'mocha t'vayin lebedina, but eventually I will take him to court, to go to court, but still to a court. I will argue that he had no right to do that. At this point, during the third stage already, Jewish lives are protected by law. If he were to kill me, then he himself would be executed by the Romans. So therefore I'm not in such danger from him in the first place. Therefore I'm not fully agreeing to sell it to him. I know that I always have a chance to take him to court later. And therefore even a goyish court. And therefore that's what the Mishnah is saying. That then at that point, when another person buys it from the sikkur, then you have to discuss when the sale is valid and when not.